guest today is Julian Ankeny, who teaches courses in Native American literature, creative writing, and Nimiipuk or Nez Perce language and cultural reclamation, revitalization, and learning at Washington State University. Julian has presented on Nimiipuk culture and storytelling, both regionally and nationally. On October 29th, she will be performing at UC Berkeley alongside author and UC Berkeley professor Beth Piatote, and with members of a recently formed Nez Perce Writing and Language Revitalization Group that will share new work reflecting on woven corn husk bags. Readings of these works will tie together histories of these objects and contemporary perspectives on Nimiipuu language, community, and culture. This event is presented alongside Berkeley's Hearst Museum online exhibit, Cloth That Stretches, Weaving Community Across Time and Space, which explores textiles as a site of identity formation and cultural resilience. Julian's going to be talking today about her memoir, In Process, A Bouquet of Frogs. Julian, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Link reading at Berkeley is going to be available online, right?
Yes, I think there's a link for registration, and then they send you the link for the talk.
So we'll post that link along with the segment. So we've been planning to do this interview for a few months, and quite coincidentally, it turns out that we're speaking today on the anniversary of the 1877 surrender of Chief Joseph, who together with a band of Nimiipuu Wallawas, estimated at about 750, managed for months to keep a far larger complement of U.S. cavalry at bay before they were forced to surrender about 30 miles from the Canadian border. So your work really takes up the contemporary struggles of the Nimiipuu for self-determination against all odds, and including against the legacy of toxic masculinity and of racism and sexism that you experienced in school. And you also write pretty extensively about the toxic masculinity that you encountered from your abusive stepfather, who is a Marine Corps vet. So just really, you know, foregrounding the fact that that toxic masculinity, you know, it's part of the legacy of colonialism and was not a pattern of gendered relations traditionally. So you're going to read us a little section from your memoir?
Yes, I am. Tatsiao-yao, thank you.
Tatsiao-yao.
A Bouquet of Frogs. The Rules of Eating. Did you just look at the TV? He barked. Bits of food sprayed from his flapping jowls. No, I said, with my head turned down, replying to my plate and not the man. Downturned eyes, downturned down. I was really examining my hamburger patty in the thick brown gravy nestled in a fat mound of very lumpy Idaho gold potatoes. I liked the lumps, though. They were solid, not mixed in. Those potato pieces were spared the beating of the wire whisk. They were definitely not beaten enough. That was the motto of my stepfather. What did you say to me? He belched out. I could see the brimstone burning inside his eyes. One look could turn any child into dust. No, I said, after a moment, trying to gulp down the last of my potatoes. Look again and you'll get the belt. Yellow sulfur fumes began rising from his nostrils. Before the retribution was dealt, the less fortunate, he liked to slowly take off his brown leather work belt. The belt slithered around his waist like a snake. He would fold in half to form a loop in between his hands. Making the belt loose, in one fell motion, he would extend his arm so the belt came together in a terrifying snap. It made a person jump every time. The sound was scary enough, let alone feeling its wrath. His words were like that belt, so harsh, like a slap across the face. Look again. I shifted my eyes from him to look at my mother. She just sat there, peaceful creature that she was. She considered herself Catholic, though Mass was never a regular occurrence, except for Easter Sundays. It is hard to eat and pray at the same time, I am assuming. Her eyes were closed and she gulped down some of the meat and swallowed her voice with it. Our Father, who art at the head of the dinner table, hallowed be thy cursed name. Thy kingdom come, thy will not be done, on earth as it is in this living hell. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive thy stepfather who has trespassed against us. And led us into temptation, but delivered us from his evil. Amen. Children were not supposed to even look at the television when we were seated at the dinner table. But I had to have one last glance of defiance. Turn the TV off, he said. Only he was allowed to talk. We were supposed to eat in complete silence. The television was switched off with the remote immediately. We sat there, my stepfather, my mother, sister, and me. The only parts of our fragile bodies left moving were our silent mouths. Only the sound of chewing was heard. I looked at my stepfather. He was staring at me from the head of the table. I was sitting at the other end, looking directly back at him. His eyes shone like the fiery black obsidian. I couldn't help but to dissect him like a frog in biology class. We looked into each other's eyes. I saw the whiteness of his sclera start to dissolve just like the dead frog's eyes. His pupils quivering engulfed the light white, and I could only stare into that blackness. All the blackness of the universe was in those eyes. I knew he wanted me to say one more word so he could spank me, but I didn't have the strength of will yet. I would lose sight of all time and place as everything around me slowly turned to the gray-black mold that engulfs dead flowers when they have been left in a vase with water too long. What did my mother see in him? I never got the chance to ask her that question because what I saw was what was much worse. I had no context for the role of a female child and how she should be treated by a step-parent. I didn't know that these childhood experiences were shaping the way I would reproduce and perform the gendered identities assigned to me. I learned to do things in silence. I sat in silence. I was subservient. I was submissive and surviving, remaining unheard for most of my young life. I was trying to survive the devil's dealings at 10 years old. How to kill a fish. The directions on the side of the box specifically state that some experiments are doomed to repeat themselves. Salt the meat and then salt the vegetables. Salt kills the germs on the vegetables. Salt is the purifier. It is the cure. Salt the lettuce before eating, letting the lettuce stay crisp for the most delectable salad your mother never taught you how to make. Rinse the salt off with cold water. Salting vegetables helps to prevent certain types of bacteria that could easily break a young family apart. Then lay the preparation aside for about 4 years to ruminate after the first ignition of a child's soul. On a dry, clean surface, prepare your other ingredients for chopping. Chop onion, garlic, and the secret ingredient, minced very fine, and add them to one happily bloody ground deer burger. It's that simple. I had been researching medicinal herbs for quite some time in the seventh grade, taking careful note of the poisonous ones. The herbs were to be part of a different type of potion and tonic that I could only imagine selecting, searching, finding, and harvesting at the precise moment of utmost potency for the uniquely wild attributes to work. The plant I found in medicinal and poisonous herbs of the Northwest. And they were all right in my own backyard. My very own indigenous plant supply was at my fingertips. Easily accessible for a preteen to gather, a nice patch of Jimson weed grew across the gravel alley and lay in wait side of what is now a used tire shop. Nestled by the concrete slabs, growing slowly inch by inch, growing with its curly cube vines, searching for new lands to explore, was the weed. It had its own manifest destiny, new crevices to hide in, get buried in, reaching its tendrils up so softly, touching and grasping at the hem of my pants, as if to let me know it was there just for me, reminding me, don't go. Maybe even placed there by God, the key ingredient to make my meal complete, lay the plant. Among the white trumpets of flowers, those gigantic evangeline chalices of angels making sounds of heavenly psalms was God's handiwork. The huge, soft, and inviting green velvet, broad, heart-shaped leaves shrouded the colossal pods. They were 2.5 inches in diameter and perfectly round. The bulbous seed pods grew covered in half-inch spikes of pod protection, nature's natural defense for the seeds and their continued population on Earth. The dried and ground-up seeds could be used for the darkest arts of food preparation. These were the pods of my retribution, my contribution to society to end a man's life.
Julian, thanks so much for this really remarkable work and this description of plotting to poison your stepfather. And your memoir also deals with the experience of having lost 3 children as a result of a lack of access to quality health care. And certainly that lack of access to quality health care is the norm in Indian country and accounts at least in part for the far higher rates of mortality compared to white Americans. There's a lot of imagery of frogs in here, and the memoir itself is called A Bouquet of Frogs.
I draw inspiration from our Nimiipuu Timt, Nimiipuu Tetwatit, our stories. And so the story that always constantly stalks me is Sun, Moon, and Frog Girl. Frogs are, they're just everywhere. They're in my backyard. They call to me.
It's definitely a story of a kid really fighting back against elements of colonial violence that find their way into the home.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people only focus on like physical violence, but a lot of the time paired with that physical violence is also like mental abuse. And that in a lot of ways, that mental abuse really stays with you. And we can tend to dwell there. And writing some of that out and expressing that fact of patriarchal violence that stems from colonial violence, it's something that happens to so many people. And I think that people are scared to talk about it. There's so much richness to be shared and to learn from.
Yeah, I'm reminded of Audre Lorde's kind of adage, you know, your silence will not protect you. So this is such a powerful memoir, and it emerges against all odds and despite, you know, many, many ways in which people attempt to silence you, including teacher that you write about really powerfully. Thank you again, Julian, for joining me today. My guest today has been Julian Ankeny, who teaches at Washington State University. Julian, thank you so much.
Katsiao-yao. Thank you, Desiree.
And we'll be talking again soon. So we look forward to that. Thanks so much, Julian. Katsiao-yao.
Katsiao-yao. Thank you.
This has been Desiree Helgers for the Olmo Variety Hour.
Right now, struggling, feel like giving it right now. I pray for you, pray that you come back home. I pray that you understand that you're never alone. I pray for the single mothers and the deadbeat dads. Drop the kids off and go party, gets me mad. So I pray, pray for peace and pray for change. Keep on praying when everything stays the same. And I pray for the pastors and all of the churches and those who cry night song following hearses. I pray for you, pray for the sick and the poor. Pray for the rich man who don't give to the Lord. And I pray for wisdom and I pray for power, and I pray we'll be ready in the final hour. And I pray for those who keep judging ministry, and I pray for my friends and my enemies.
Can somebody help me up? Who?